Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Kalish Leviel, your practitioner of the day, along with Wanda Maddox and our intern practitioner, Wendy, who's hiding in the background. Only it's not Heidi, it's Wendy, but, you know, never mind. In case you don't know, we have morning prayers at 7 o'clock every morning. If you need the link to that, just go on the website and you'll be able to find it. In fact, Monday through Friday. Isn't that the same as weekdays?
That's right.
Okay, good. All right. What else can I add? I want to dedicate this prayer to my never not now buddy. And if you have somebody in your life that you're concerned about their health and their healing process, hold them in your heart real lightly right now. And know with me that as I breathe, I am. As I think, I am. As I'm here, I am. I am the infinite, all there is. And I am all about healing. I am all about being open and being, knowing that this moment is the only moment. This noise is the only noise. And that everything that comes through this time frame, this moment, this brilliance, this wisdom is for good, is for healing, is for blessing, and is for now. Thank you, sweet spirit. And so it is.
Tabor and I often are of one mind when it comes to thinking about what we're bringing to you. And today, the overall theme for our year is your soul's compass. And the theme for the month is pilgrimage towards the mystery. And my talk is following the path to the deeply real. And it's based on a quote by Phil Cousineau. Some of you have probably read his book, The Art of Pilgrimage. How many of you have read that? Just a few. It's worth reading. He was a student of Joseph Campbell, so he's speaking from a mythopoetic kind of frame about travel and about pilgrimage as sacred travel. Anyway, here's the quote. The time has come to set out for sacred ground that will stir our sense of wonder. It is down the path to the deeply real, where time stops and we are seized by the mysteries. This is the journey we cannot not take. Phil Cousineau. And so, you know, what I wanted to speak to you about today is down the path and into what for me is deeply real, but it took me years on the path to really understand what I was experiencing, and more years than I care to think, to be able to find my way there by choice. For many years, it was an accident. So let me back up and tell you about that a little bit. Where to start? So let me start with brain science. How about that? So as many of you know, I used to be a therapist, retired now for a few years, and one of my focuses was on neuroscience and using the left and the right part of the brain to help people heal from trauma. And so because of that work, I learned a lot about how those two different hemispheres of ours work. And I'd have to say, understanding it, that both sides of the brain are about thinking and feeling. But the left side of the brain is really about structure. It's about time. It's about sequencing. It's about ordering things, you know. And so actually in our society, we're sort of in the thrall of the left brain. So if you keep a schedule, if you keep a calendar like I do with lots of different colors for different things you have to do, that's all left brain stuff. It's great. The colors, maybe not, but you know. The right brain, on the other hand, is also about thinking, but it's really about the world of experiential wonder. It's about the place where all of the great poets and musicians and mystics live most of their life, is in right brain reality. And so when we're seeking the deeply real, one of the things that can be very frustrating, I don't know if this is true for you, but it's true for me, is that because I live so much of my life in this sort of structured, timely, make sure I'm on time for appointments, make sure I've got everything in the calendar so I don't goof up, you know, show up, that the mystical, the sacred, the right brain wonder and awe part can kind of take, like if you're in a suburban, the way back seat, you know, with very little leg room. And so early in my life, I was really wanting to have a deeper experience of the sacred. How about you? Yeah. I don't think you'd find yourself here unless you were forced to be here by your partner or your parent. I don't think you'd be here if you weren't interested in this topic. So it turns out that the way that we can encounter the deeply real is by finding balance within these two ways of thinking and feeling, and to begin to allow the right brain, awe and wonder and mystery piece, to have more of a say in our experience. So I brought you a story. Actually, I have so many that we could be here all day, but we're not going to be. This is by a woman named Kim Hermanson. She tells the story of healing. And she says, when I was 26, I traveled with my boyfriend to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan to see the fall colors. But we never saw them. An hour after landing at the airport while driving at the highway speed of 60 miles an hour, a car crossed the center line and crashed into us. I tried to move my legs to get out of the car, but they were lifeless. I then noticed the sharp pain in my back and realized I had no feeling from the waist down. My back was broken, my spinal cord displaced by 40 degrees. Eventually, I was airlifted to the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, where the doctors gave me less than a 5% chance of ever walking again. We all have defining stories that shape our lives, and for me, it wasn't the collision. It was something a nurse whispered before the air ambulance arrived. Of course, I was terrified. I knew my back was broken, and I was in excruciating pain. And she whispered, "Imagine you are floating on a cloud." So I closed my eyes and imagined I was floating on a light, soft cloud. I don't know if the nurse was an angel. I think all nurses are, but that's my sideline. I don't know if the nurse was an angel who came to bring me a message, but I once heard an interview with the novelist Stacy Duresmo, who said, "When we humans have more than we can bear, the gods take pity on us and change us into something else." In those excruciating moments after the collision, the gods took pity on me, and I became something else. I became a cloud. So she goes on and says, after the car accident, after the doctors at the Mayo Clinic patched my back together with two metal rods, I spent a few weeks in their rehab facility and then returned home. A year later, I was playing soccer. Today, no one would guess that I'd been in such a terrible accident. And over the years, those moments that allowed me to come back to myself became the source of my life's work. And she goes on from there. Her story, believe it or not, is actually not that unusual. The ability for people to heal from incredible things is in the lexicon of sacred humans. We know that this happens. We've heard about the mother whose child got under a car and she lifts the car by herself. We've heard about the stories of spontaneous remissions of things. We've heard all those stories. The question is, how do we do that, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe you don't ask those questions. I'm like, hey, I'd like to know how to do that. And so I thought I'd talk a little bit about what I know about that. Because in my journey, on my path to the deeply real, I've had the great good fortune to work for a long time with right brain thinking. I didn't call it that at the time. I was working with teenagers for 25 years, and we were doing summer camps and winter camps, and we created workshops. And a lot of the workshops were designed to help the teens deal with the changing reality of their lives. And so they had a lot to do with metaphor, with storytelling, and with experiential learning. So we're checking on Archie. and so this was one of my experiences. I had gone through a really traumatic time in my life, and I had invited this practitioner in the center that I was at the time to come in. He had studied Native American Way. And so I had invited the teens to come into the meditation room, and he started leading a drum journey. And so the drum journey specializes in using the drum beat of the heartbeat. So thump, 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 all the way through the journey. And the journey goes on from there, and we took the teens down. They were leaning against a sacred tree, and somehow they were able to dive down through the earth, down, down into this amazing, huge cave where all the animals of the world were waiting for them. And one by one, they were asked to choose to actually invite one of the animals to be their guide. Well, I was doing this with them. And so I asked the animals to be my guide, and guess what I got? Porcupines. I was so disappointed. I was like, not a mountain lion, not porcupines, you know. And so we waddled along in this journey, and there were two of them, you know. And the journey went on, and we came to a frozen waterfall, which was totally appropriate for where I felt right then. Frozen heart, frozen being, really scared, all that. So they're waddling me along to this frozen waterfall, and I'm like, this is all you got? I already know about this part. And then they climbed. They said in porcupine language, wait. So I stood at the bottom of the waterfall while they climbed up the side. So far, I couldn't see them, and then they came back down. And the drum journey was, they're going to bring you a gift. So they brought me this little sprig of evergreen that was growing. And at the time, I'm like, so I get porcupines and I get a sprig of evergreen. Great. You know, but, you know, the thing about this kind of learning is you have to think about it. You have to allow it to kind of speak to you. So we came out of the drum journey. I went home. I'm like, I got porcupines. And then I was sitting with a friend, and she said, well, what do you think that means? And I said, well, they hurt people. she said, no, but let's, Lulu's here. let's really look at what are porcupines like? And actually it turns out that they're very, very kind. They're very open to loving other animals unless they get hurt. And it's only then that the quills come up and can become defensive. Said, okay, so you're saying what? My friend goes, well, I'm not saying. But I think maybe you might be in that quills up place, you know, just saying. And then the evergreen sprig was, you know, well, here's this ice waterfall. Everything seems frozen. And what do they bring you? Something that's newly growing. So it seems to me that what they're saying is you can trust this journey. So, you know, does that make any sense to you? I mean, on one level, the left brain goes, what? But the right brain is like, oh, gotcha, gotcha. Where, I'm asking you now, so that's a story about me because I don't want to tell a story about any of you, but I'm asking you, where does that kind of understanding come from? And it comes from a different place than the timelines and the scheduling and the left brain way of living. It comes from this other place. That's where the healing of that woman came as well. Picture yourself as a cloud. I mean, to someone who is not aware of this other realm of being, it would sound crazy that somehow that would be the impetus for her to relax and allow the body to heal. And there's so many stories about people who somehow make a shift into the sacred. And the shift has to do with a way of perceiving and a way of being in the world that's a little different. So, you know, you hear from the poets, you hear from the storytellers things about, you know, they'll use words like thinking of the miracle, how grass turns into food for the baby lamb. Okay, we can all sort of, can you see that or feel what that poet's talking about? That's Mary Oliver. And so my question was, all right, that's great. That's great. I did a drum journey. I got this thing. I really helped. Okay, good. How do I do that on purpose? And so I began to meditate. And meditation was at first, because I was in Plum Village with Thich Nhat Hanh, great, because they were all meditating. They'd been meditating for years, and so their energy was kind of holding me. But as soon as I got back to my lovely children, who were very young at that time, and into my life, every time I tried to meditate, it was like, I don't know if this happens to you. It still happens to me. It's like, yada, 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 yada. And don't forget, you got to do that. And what about, what are we having for dinner? And I got to go grocery shopping, and we're going to have that for dinner. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm meditating. Oh, yeah. Back to the breath. And nanoseconds later, yada, yada, yada. So what happened, though, through the meditation practice, and maybe you do other practices like yoga, tai chi, qigong, any spiritual practice will show you how your mind is working. Is over time I realized, all right, sitting in meditation with the yada yadas is sitting in a place that doesn't allow me to go to where meditation can take me. It's trying to be. And then every once in a while, I'd slide into this other place. Maybe you have too, where I was just in it. I was just being in it. And in that place, it was like pure bliss, absolutely pure bliss. Quiet, peaceful, joyful. Usually didn't last that long, but I it would last long enough that I would be like, this is it, this is the place. As soon as my mind said that, of course, I'm back to the other way. So I'm telling you all these stories about me and about Kim, because the deeply real for me is that place. The deeply real for me is the place where, you know, the master teacher Jesus said, it's the place where the peace passes all understanding. It's the place where the kingdom of heaven resides within us. I mean, the words that these mystical people use try to point to where it is. Like Rumi says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, there are not enough words. There are no words. Even words like you and me don't make any sense. So they're pointing to this place, but it's not out there. It's inside. It's inward. And it resides within this ability to go to right brain, really. I mean, so in the science of mind, which is the philosophy that we teach here, without knowing all that neuroscience and the left and the right brain and all that, the founder of this tradition used all the world's philosophical ideas, kind of the main things that they were pointing to, and said, look, and I'll read you what he said. He was writing in like the 30s, so his language is a little weird. He's just see if you think he's talking about this place, the deeply real. To daily meditate on the perfect life and to daily embody the great ideal is a royal road to freedom, to the peace which passes understanding, and is happiness to the soul of sacred humans. Let us learn to see as spirit must, with perfect vision. Let us seek the good and the true and believe in them with our whole heart, even though every person we meet is filled with suffering and limitation appears at all sides. We cannot afford to believe in imperfection for a single second. Perfect spirit within me, perfect life within me, come forth into expression through me as that which I am. So for me, the power of shifting into the mystery is the power of transformation, healing, and illumination. And this is why, even though I don't like to meditate with the yada yadas, I still do. Because over time, what's begun to happen is I can feel the shift into this place. So in our tradition, this is how we do this. We use both the left and the right brains. So we set an intention. So if I were, you know, in coffee hour to come up and say, so do you have an intention for what you would like to experience in your life? Maybe not, you know, a new Mercedes, but a little bit different intention. Maybe I'd like to really be happy in my relationship, or I would really love to have a job that not only pays me well, but appreciates who I am. Whatever the intention, right? So that's the left brain saying, this is what I want. This is how I would like it to feel and be. And then we marry it with spiritual practice. We move into a place where we're literally allowing ourselves to open into the mystery, bringing our intention along with us, but letting it go and allowing, through prayer, through spiritual practice, allowing the mystery to take it. And just like the story you heard about the woman who was playing soccer after a year, it's almost incredible to me still after all these years that when I set an intention and I really bring it into the sacred, and I just keep doing that day after day, it tends to show up. Often better than I even imagined. Sometimes different than I imagined. Sometimes things have to move and shift for that to come to be. How many of you have experienced this? Yeah. It's a potent practice. And in the early days of our tradition, it was used to manifest wealth and all kinds of things related to that. But as our philosophy has matured, what we've all begun to realize, because I'm old enough to have been in that culture of manifesting wealth, nothing wrong with that, especially if you need money, right? But what I've seen in our philosophy is as we've matured, we've realized, wait a minute, we could actually use the same principle to manifest peace. Peace in our hearts, peace in our relationships, peace in the world. We could use our intention to actually manifest through the sacred, a different way of being in the world, not just for us, but as a possibility for everyone. And truly, I believe that I'm seeing that in many of our younger people as we come to grips with climate change. I'm seeing that the intention that many of us who are sitting in this room and so many more have set is actually transforming the way things are happening. I'll give you one example. So For a long time, many of us have known that climate change was the major risk for all of us to survive. And so we've been setting an intention for not for stupid people to stop it, not a good intention, but rather for solutions to be made through, manifested through anyone and everyone who could bring about change and transformation so that the world is saved and us too. So I'm sure you've heard about the young man who created an ocean cleaning system. And when that first was announced, I don't know if you noticed, but it was poo-pooed. It was like, oh, that's just a pie-in-the-sky idea. This is just a prototype. It's never going to work. Well, it's out there now, and it's working just fine. The Greta Thunbergs of the world, who, you know, started by sitting on a street corner with a sign and now talks with the Dalai Lama on a regular basis, these ideas are coming through in different ways, and they can come through us too. Maybe not in the grand scale, but that guy that invented that thing, it was just one thing. Greta, it just was one thing. Doesn't mean we have to be grandiose. But if I were to ask you a coffee hour, what is your intention? Do you know? Because the single most problematic thing about moving from the pragmatic world into the sacred is attention. And I gotta say, I sometimes lose my focus. And so I'll have an intention, and I'll set an intention, and I'll work with it for 4 days, and then forget, lose my focus. And so for us, one of the things we can practice is paying attention to what our mind is doing, to what our heart is doing, to how we're interacting with the sacred. So that's all I got today. Let me read his quote one last time, and I'll do a short prayer. The time has come to set out for sacred ground that will stir our sense of wonder. It is down the path to the deeply real, where time stops and we are seized by the mysteries. This is the journey we cannot not take. So join me in this prayer. I know for you, as I know so clearly for myself, that we as sacred humans have as factory equipment a deep, profound connection to the sacred ground of all beingness. It resides within us. It exists all around us and through everything. And so I set my intention very clearly to see and know the deeply real, that which is sacred. And as I set this intention more and more, my experience begins to show me opportunities for seeing just that, being with the sacred in small ways and large, through my grandchildren and my children, through the natural world, and through just simply being awake in the world as it is. I know that in this sacred space, all kinds of insights and new ideas come forward, and that in this sacred time, there is peace, healing, and joy. I am grateful. I'm grateful to know that that space exists within, grateful to be cleaving an intention in my being to make room for this, and grateful because as soon as I say yes to this, it's there. It's never gone anywhere. It was me that left. So here I am, grateful spirit, and so it is.